I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner. A weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. I'm excited today to have in studio with me a friend and a colleague from Interpreter Foundation. As a matter of fact, he's the founder of Interpreter Foundation, Dan Peterson. And we're here to talk about a wonderful new film. So thank you for joining us here at KSL.
It's good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Interpreter Foundation, first of all, because a lot of people will say, Interpreter Foundation, that sounds really familiar. Or, I've got the Interpreter Bible. Did you guys publish that? No, that's not. But what is Interpreter Foundation?
Well, the Interpreter Foundation was founded in 2012, and really, in a sense, you could see it as a continuation of the work of the old FARMS, the Foundation for Ancient Research in Mormon Studies, when the people who assumed control of the Neil A. Maxwell Institute for Religious Scholarship, which had sort of renamed itself that from FARMS, decided to take it in a very different direction. A lot of us who'd been involved in the old organization said, you know, we really need to continue that work. And it's the work of defending, commending the scriptures and the doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, defending the claims of the Restoration, using scholarship to look at those things and display the richness and argue for the authenticity of the products of the Restoration given through Joseph Smith and maintained by his successors.
Fabulous. So how does someone find the Interpreter Foundation?
Well, you can find it online. Our chief enterprise really is that we publish weekly articles. In fact, lately it's been twice weekly or three articles a week. We may have created a monster in a way. And blogs and everything else, and they're the Interpreter Foundation website. So you can go online and look for the Interpreter Foundation, and you'll find it there.
Someone will find it, and you can still search for Mormon Interpreter.
Right.
But, you know.
We backed away from that.
That's right. What the used Church to be, of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Interpreter Foundation.
Yeah, what used to be Interpreter Journal of Mormon Scholarship is now Interpreter Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship.
Yeah.
So
it is a fabulous website, and there are some wonderful articles. I will just say that for every listener. Go check it out, because you'll find scholarly articles on all kinds of topics of interest, whether you're interested in Book of Mormon geography or LDS history or comments about doctrine or Christianity. It's just all there.
Yeah.
There's some wonderful things.
I'll tell you, I'm really excited about one thing we're about to start, which is a new series of blog articles. I think about 26 or 28 or something like that, already written. They're just waiting to go. We're just getting them into shape to start. They'll probably appear about once a week by a former professor of psychology up in Alberta by the name of Kyla Rasmussen, who is now working for the Alberta provincial government as some sort of statistical analyst or something. And he devotes his attention to the basic claims of the church and the scriptures and so on, and applies what's called Bayesian statistical analysis to this. And we wanted to be sure that we got it right. He's very good at Bayesian analysis. It's something he does. But oddly enough, this is why I mentioned it's so fun, that just before he sent that stuff to me and approached me about it. I'd gotten a note from a fellow in England at the University of Oxford who's a postdoctoral fellow in mathematics at the University of Oxford. And he said, you know, I don't know if there's ever anything I can do to help the Interpreter Foundation, but if there ever is, would you contact me? And so I thought, okay, you want to go over the mathematics in this thing? You know, the mathematics is going to be kind of hidden. It's not going to be a really deeply mathematical thing. But it's looking at the probabilities that Joseph Smith got these things right by chance and concluding that the probabilities are really low. But it's been gone over by two specialists, you know, for these blog, the series of blog articles. I think it's really going to be fun.
That sounds wonderful.
And they're clearly written. They're really approachable. Don't be scared off by statistical analysis. You know, he makes the argument really clear.
Terrific. In addition to the blog, the website, articles, Interpreter Foundation's into filmmaking
yes.
now.
Yeah. And we have a radio show. We do all sorts of things. We decided that what we needed to do was to reach people where they are. And we live in a culture that is very visual now. And so one of the things we thought was, well, film, video, whatever we can do there. And so we did a short film some time ago about Robert Kundick, kind of as an experiment. He was the former tabernacle organist and a composer. And we made a little half-hour thing about him that I thought turned out amazingly well. And these filmmakers decided, we'd like to do more of this. And so I'll tell you a story quickly. We were going to do one. I still hope someday we'll do it on the brothers Carl Anderson and Richard L. Anderson. Carl Anderson is the man that President Hinckley has dubbed Mr. Kirtland, because he's been the bishop, the stake president, now the patriarch over the Kirtland area, and he's done a lot to the renovation of historic Mormon Kirtland, as we've called it. And Richard Anderson was the great expert on the Witnesses to the Book of Mormon. By the way, the Witnesses film that we've done is dedicated to him. If people will watch at the end, they'll see it's dedicated to the memory of Richard Lloyd Anderson, a witness to the Witnesses. And that's really important to me personally. But I sent the filmmakers some stuff about Richard Anderson's work, and they called me up and said, wow, this is great stuff. We need to talk. This is a movie that demands to be made. Well, I've been obsessed with The Witnesses for years. That was music to my ears. I thought, wow, I found some people who think this is as great a story as I do. And so that's been one of our consuming interests over the past several years, to produce this film, which is finally appearing in theaters. Well, one of the things that we wanted to do, one of the things that I insisted on from the beginning, was that this could not, and I don't mean to be insulting, this could not be a church visitor center movie where there's no conflict and, you know, everything's hunky-dory and you don't see much negative. This had to be a real warts and all sort of story for several reasons. One, that's actually the truth. Two, if we tried to whitewash it, we'd be found out very quickly. And third, I think it makes the witnesses' faithfulness to their testimonies, after all the stress, after all the strife, the alienation, and in some cases the anger, it makes their faithfulness, their insistence on what they saw and what they heard, all the more impressive. In other words, you know, you've got to know the bitter to know the sweet. A Book of Mormon sentiment, and it's really true in this case, that if you understand how bad things got and you see they still insisted, they heard the voice of God, they saw an angel, they saw the plates, they know the Book of Mormon is true, that's powerful stuff.
It is very powerful stuff. And the film came out last Wednesday, and so the premiere is now done. And if somebody wants to see this, they can go, as they say, to a theater near you. And how would someone find where they can see this wonderful film?
There's a website that's been set up called witnessesfilm.com. And if you go there, there's an area up in the upper left-hand corner that says Get Tickets. And you can find, you know, search by state. Some states have a lot of theaters. California does, Utah for obvious reasons, Arizona, Idaho. But other places you might be surprised to find that there are theaters that are available, either where the film will be available, you know, it'll be on the marquee, it'll be a regularly scheduled film, or in some cases, especially where the LDS audience is smaller, they have the film. They've already been sent out. But at these theaters, people can call in and organize a special private screening for a family group or a ward or an elders quorum or something like that. And there are instructions on the website for that too. The distributor will help you set up a private screening. And it's cheaper than people may think, I'm told. Now, we're not responsible for the pricing, but, you know, and I hasten to say, by the way, I'm not going to make a dime off this thing. So, but you can do that. And it turns out to be fairly reasonable for certain sizes of groups.
Well, I've noticed it. Wonderful theaters and wonderful sound systems today, that there must be some kind of a cost associated with.
Yes.
Something like so. But it's a fabulous film. I saw it at the premiere. It's absolutely spectacular. And when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about some of the details and about the content of the film and about why you should see it.
Yep.
In a little bit more detail. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today, in studio Professor Daniel Peterson, who's also the president of the Interpreter Foundation. We're talking about the new Witnesses film that's out in theaters now that we encourage you to go see. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. And with me in studio, Professor Daniel Peterson, president of Interpreter Foundation, here to talk about the Interpreter Foundation, but especially about its new film offering, which is called Witnesses.
Yeah, I mean, one of the difficulties in the film is that it covers four people. Joseph Smith, inevitably, and the three witnesses, Oliver Cowdery, David Whitmer, Martin Harris. And their stories are not always all together, so you've got to follow four protagonists. That was a little bit of a difficulty. But it picks them up from just before the time, well, when Joseph Smith retrieves the plates from the Hill of Cumorah, and then the time when the three witnesses come into his sphere. And the role they play, their experience with the angel and the plates and the voice of God. And this is the thing that will shock some people, I think, maybe, is that it also gets into their disaffection from the church and the issues that caused that, the things that led to the stresses between Joseph and the three witnesses and to their departure from the church and their excommunication from the church. But it doesn't leave it there. It brings them back to the point where two of them return. And even the third who doesn't, David Whitmer, bears his faithful testimony to his dying day. He's the last of all the witnesses, the three, the eight, and the informal witnesses. He lives until 1888, and he bears his testimony firmly until his death. And in a sense, he has it inscribed on his tombstone, literally inscribed on his tombstone. He bears it after death as well. One of the things that I most enjoyed after the film was shown at the premiere was a number of people came up to me and said, you know, this is the first time I've ever really understood why they left the church. No, you can see it and sort of understand. We're not saying they were right to leave the church, but it's understandable why they left the church.
I've always felt like they were all really good men.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to me that this story is told through the eyes of the now older David Whitmer, who was the one that did not come back. Talk a bit about how that happened and about the reporter who comes to him.
Yeah, you know, David lived to 1888, long after Brigham Young had died, and all of the other witnesses were long gone. And so he's the last survivor of this group, and he was interviewed constantly. He lived in a non-LDS area. Oliver Cowdery had died, you know, 38 years earlier. Yeah. So David Whitmer is there, and he's in a non-LDS area, very respected, by the way. For all that he was associated with the evil, wicked Mormonites, he was at one time mayor of Richmond, Missouri. This is astonishing. It speaks well for his character. But he's interviewed constantly. Reporters, traveling LDS missionaries on their way to England, RLDS missionaries coming through, or general authorities of the church. They all want to talk to David Whitmer, sometimes several times a day. I think it actually kind of drove him crazy sometimes. You get the impression that David was a bit of a cantankerous character. He's rigid in what he believes, and he will not bow to anybody else. He will not back away from it, which makes him a wonderful witness, too. You know, this man is rock solid in terms of his integrity. And so what we did with Edwin Kelly in this film is he actually is kind of a composite of interviewers. You can't show, it's bad enough with four protagonists, you can't have 50 different reporters.
Right, plus you have to have the dialogue that comes into play with one guy.
But the things that David says, the questions that he's asked are real questions and real answers. The dialogue is real. Some of you have to make up to give the thing a narrative flow, but most of the significant statements made by anybody in this film are real statements that can be shown from the documents.
This is an important point because somebody is going to be thinking out there, God, this sounds like a nice fictionalized history kind of a film. And it really, the reason I like this so much is because it views, if I can use that term, kind of like a film, of course, and it's very, very high quality. And yet the precision and attention to detail and accuracy, I believe, is more like a documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, we really did try to not make up any important event or anything like that. We don't know exactly what they said in small talk, but the major things are all documented and true. For example, early on, somebody saw an early version of the film. There's a scene where Martin Harris swaps out the stone, the seer stone that Joseph is using, because he's been told, well, maybe Joseph's just memorized this, and the stone is an irrelevant prop. So Martin switches it. And Joseph can't translate. He's just lost. He can't figure out why, because the stone looks like the one he'd been using, but it's not working the way it was supposed to work. Now, I don't know how it worked, but somehow it did. And someone asked afterwards, or kind of challenged us and said, that didn't really happen. Oh, yes, it did.
Oh, yes, it did.
Yeah, that's a real story. We would not make something like that up. I think one of the things that I like best about the film is that it shows Joseph as an emerging prophet. We have this notion that he sort of, the minute he was called, 1820 or at least 1830, 1828, he knows everything. And he's in charge of everything and he has no problems. Well, I don't think that's even possibly true. This is a young man. It's shocking how young he is. People will be shocked at the ages of the actors. But you'll see examples in Joseph's part of almost despair at one point when the 116 manuscript pages are lost, and about the same time his firstborn son dies. And you'll see a scene between Emma and Joseph where she's saying, why is this happening to us? He says, I don't know. She says, aren't you a prophet? Didn't you see God? And he says, yes, I did. Well, doesn't he speak to you? Well, yes, but not right now. I don't know. Yeah. And I think that's an important, that's a touching scene. And there are other points where he's saying, I try to do God's will, but it doesn't always work out the way I wanted. And I think if we assume that Joseph always was in charge, that somehow he was superhuman, then we make a mistake. He was a human, and we're trying to show him as he's becoming the great prophet, who eventually will be president of the church, lieutenant general of the Nauvoo Legion, mayor of Nauvoo, everything else. But up until that point, he's always leaning on other people because I think he feels he needs help.
Another scene that stood out for me, I hope you can describe for a second, is when Joseph's really a little bit frustrated and doesn't know quite what to do when there's this opposing seer stone from the Whitmer's in-laws, the Jases and so, and how he dealt with that.
Yeah. You have the scene where the Whitmers were, they basically came into the church as a pack and they left the church as a pack when they did. And that includes Whitmer brothers-in-law or sons-in-law, Hiram Page, for example, and eventually Oliver Cowdery. And Hiram Page has a seer stone. We remember the poor guy often only for that, which is not fair. There's a documentary that will follow this, and it shows Hiram Page's heroism in defending, maintaining his testimony of the Book of Mormon under a savage beating. So he deserves a better press than he often gets. But they're challenging Joseph a little bit. Well, didn't you say that everybody could receive revelation? Yes. Well, don't you use a seer stone? Yes. Well, they say you don't use it anymore. They really like the seer stone. And he says, well, it was like milk for an infant. I don't need it now. But finally, he has to assert his prophetic authority. No one, and this is the Doctrine and Covenants speaking, no one shall receive revelation in my church, save it be my servant Joseph Smith. You know, and then eventually, you know, and him who shall be appointed in his stead. You know, when I was a bishop, I used to have young women come in to me and say, well, what should I do? You know, my boyfriend has received a revelation that I'm to be his wife. And I said, well, you know, unless and until he's your husband, he has not the slightest right to receive revelation on your behalf. If you haven't received that revelation, you're not bound by anything. We don't have authority over other people unless we've been called to have it.
in the last minute of our show, tell people again where they can find tickets or how to find tickets for the Witnesses movie. And please go see it right away. Don't wait 3 weeks. The viewing audience during the first several days is very, very important.
It's hugely important. Other theaters look at that. I know our distributor will be on the phone shortly arguing for extended runs in various theaters or for new theater screens. And if he can come back to them with strong numbers, they say, whoa, okay, that looks good. I'll take a risk on this movie. You know, I'll devote a screen to that instead of to something else. So it's important to us that people go see it, and especially early if they can. They need to go to witnessesfilm.com. It'll give them a list of the places where it's currently showing. And if there's not a place near them, it may change.
This is not just in 10 theaters across the country. Hundreds of theaters.
Yep, that's right. Literally 350 or maybe right now a little more than 350 theaters in 40 states. And possibly, as of today, I'm not quite sure, possibly 42.
Go see Witnesses Film. Professor Peterson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Join us again next week.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.